That's the role which I think people should be made aware of that.
I think the Human Rights Council, so to speak, has tried to publicise that it's there to deal with it. Obviously, and we've had that problem. I sit on another body you may have seen called the Press Council. I'm the chairman of the appeal body of that council. Now, a lot of people get very upset about what appears in the newspaper, especially if it's insulting to them or it's true what the paper has said. So they complain. Now, I wouldn't say many of these complaints, but a good number of them are frivolous. We investigated one the other day about somebody who complained about witchcraft. A newspaper had written an article saying that witchcraft was a lot of nonsense. People shouldn't believe in witches who can do all kinds of things. They should do other things. Now, we looked at this and we looked at whether it was accurate and what the sources were. But we get a lot of complaints which are not founded in anything. Even in the judiciary, there's a Judicial Services Commission, I'm sure all of you, it's become fairly illustrious recently. It gets complaints. People don't. The one side in civil litigation, I don't have to tell you, loses, comes second. Well, they don't like us. Who's to blame the judge? What's the remedy? Go on appeal. No, don't go on appeal. Go to the Human Rights, go to the Judicial Services Commission. They can discipline him. Tell him he should have read this and he should have read that and why didn't he do the other? Why did he pull faces? I saw in the paper last night that my former illustrious colleague Goldstone is suggested he fell asleep during the evidence. That's happened before.
Thank you, Judge.
People don't like this, the body language. We used to have a judge in the Transvaal. He used to pull faces and throw his pen down when he didn't like anything. People are entitled to complain about that.
So, Parliament, how do you see the Commission relating to Parliament?
I think, if I understand the legislation correctly, I think the Council has got a report to Parliament annually. I think, am I right? And I think you've got to monitor those reports. And I think Parliament, there should be some kind of liaison officer or access. I think the chairman of the commission, maybe it does exist already. If he's got a complaint, he can speak to Mr. X. He's the liaison officer, or Mrs. X, or Miss X. And she can deal with it. And if she doesn't deal with it, he should be able to take it further. I don't believe in the buck passing. I have the biggest problem, and I used to have it when I was in an article clerk, or when I was an attorney, when I was an advocate. The more junior the official is, the more difficult it is to get hold of him. He's always in meetings, or in consultation, or in conference. All of these is nonsense. But when you spoke to the senior guy, he managed to deal with it in 5 minutes. Not because he was any more competent, but he took the bit between his teeth and he dealt with it. The other people are back passers. Long answer to a short question. Yeah. Sorry.
I'd like to ask you, Judge, a free speech question. The Constitution, as we all know, defines something called hate speech as the advocacy of hatred on four grounds that constitutes incitement to cause harm. However, the very Promotion of Equality Act, with which you are familiar, contains two free speech clauses, one of which it purports to deal with hate speech. Its heading is hate speech, section 12, if I recall.
Yes.
And it then proceeds to define hate speech in a way which bears no resemblance to the exclusion in the Constitution. What it specifically does is to include mere hurtfulness as an example of hate speech. Therefore, we're dealing with old-fashioned injuria. That the Human Rights Commission holds the view that that is unconstitutional. I hold the same view. But the reason I raise it is not to ask you necessarily what to do about that, but against the background that a very great many South Africans approach the Human Rights Commission for rulings on what they consider to be hate speech, which is usually racial or other insult or a bit of injuria. So there does appear to be a kind of a a market for this sort of thing. And my question to you is what approach the Human Rights Commission should take to this. And I want to ask it against the further background that the Film and Publications Amendment Act has now been signed into law. And as you may know, that allows the government to set up committees of what can only be called censors. They are departmental officials. They're not even independent functionaries. They're departmentally appointed committees, just like in the old days, only worse, who can actually prevent publication of certain matter. And the fact that the newspapers have been excluded doesn't appear to me to help very much. And therefore, I think we're heading down the wrong road here in respect to free speech, and I would like to know what the Human Rights Commission, should you serve on it, could do in respect of the Film and Publications Act, and whether we should do anything about the dilution of the definition of hate speech.
Right. Do I call you the Honourable Member? Right, the Honourable Member. Right. I think what you raise is very important. I've had something to do with it in my work in regard to the question of Holocaust denial and anti-Semitism. And it's a difficult problem because of the proposition that freedom of speech, you can deny the Holocaust maybe. If you're faced with the facts, what do you then do? Is it reasonable comment to say it never happened, like the Iranian president says? Do you stop him from talking altogether? I don't believe in that. I believe the answer is in education. You've got to tell people and inform them. But let me try and defend, because I'm not sure that I agree with you. I think Section 10 of the Equality Act, to which you're talking, has a very important introduction. I've got it in front of me. May I just read it? It says, subject to the proviso in Section 12, and 12 talks about dissemination and publication and accurate reporting, but let's not get to that at the moment.
I'm happy to say that proviso is in there because I was there.
Yes, the proviso is the constitutional case. But the operative part in 10, to my mind, is really sensible. It says, subject to the proviso in 12, no person may publish, propagate, advocate, or communicate words based on one or more of the prohibited grounds against any person that, and this is the part I stress, that could reasonably be construed to demonstrate, a clear intention to be hurtful, to be harmful, to incite harm, to promote or propagate hatred. Now, I think the function of the Human Rights Commission, when it has a complaint, is to evaluate the complaint against those criteria. I like to assume, and I hope I'm right, that the people who sit on that body have enough good common sense to be able to evaluate these things, that they're not prejudiced, that they're not biased, forgive me if I say that they don't belong to a particular political party. They have a role function. I'm not a card-carrying member of any political party. I'm happy to be able to look at the thing objectively. It's always a problem. My learned colleague, former colleague Edwin Cameron, I think, put it very well. He said, no judge comes to the bench as a virgin. We've all got a history. We've all got baggage. We've all got preconceived ideas. Of course, the sensible ones don't disclose that, but it's manifest in what they do. But I think you've got to try and divorce yourself from this, difficult as it may be. You're not a machine, otherwise you'd feed the complaint into a computer. And the computer would say, no, this is reasonable. You can't do that. So you deal with human beings, and I think one of the greatest attributes of a person who has to evaluate these things is an honesty and an objectivity. And not looking for promotion or going somewhere else or doing something. People are human. They want to go somewhere else. But you've got to try and divorce your mind from it. And it's not easy. I mean, the classic example, I'm sure it's familiar to you, this question of freedom of speech. Is that unlimited, unlicensed, licensed? And the classic example, which is very good, which I used to give to the magistrates and judicial officers about this aspect of the Equality Act, to shout fire in a crowded cinema when there's no fire and people now start rushing to get out of there. You can say, well, I'm trying to say what I like. True, not true. I wanted to voice my opinion, so I said fire. Well, that would be nonsense. You could never get away with that by any objective standard. If you had a reasonable belief, you saw smoke coming out of one of the windows, and there's some basis for it, maybe you're behaving reasonably. In fact, there was no smoke. Somebody was smoking a cigarette outside the window. That's a trier effect of reasonableness. It's got nothing to do with political bias or anything. I think this piece of legislation has got problems in it. I don't want to give you a lecture on the Equality Act. We spent quite a lot of time, particularly on the definition. The one that amused me greatly is the definition of sex. I always thought, as old as I am, that I knew what sex was. But there's a whole debate about this in the authorities, gender, the neutral.
Sir, when I say thank you, I mean we stop.
All right.
Thank you.
So just to finish off what I was saying there, I think it's a difficult problem to draw the line, but I think the Act, by and large, achieves a very good purpose. I wish more people knew about it.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Your Lordship, I agree with you entirely about Judge Cameron's contention. And would like to extend it by saying that no politician comes to Parliament as a patient.
Even worse, he's got a constituency, even if he doesn't agree with the caucus.
Now, having said that, Your Lordship, I just want to ask you two questions. The first question is, based on your experience as a judge, what do you consider to be the biggest challenges facing the Human Rights Commission and the culture of human rights in our country? The second question, Your Lordship, in our view, the work of the Human Rights Commission is 24 hours.
Sorry?
The work of the Human Rights Commission is 24 hours.
Yes.
Not 8 to 4. Which implies that most of the time you will be on your toes and you will be working under extreme pressure. How do you see yourself working under pressure without getting off balance? The last question, Your Lordship, is a very simple one, easy. Tell the panel about your strengths and weaknesses.
All right, let me start with the first question. I think the biggest challenge to the Human Rights Commission is to make itself known to the ordinary people, to go out to the people and say, we're available to deal with these kind of things. And to have an office or a number, or we might have to go as far as the president's number, a call line and people who can deal with your complaints. To me, that is a very important challenge. One of the problems, and this is the Constitution, I would guess, and I don't have any statistical information, that the majority of people have a vague idea of what it's all about. But the real nitty-gritty that they got a basis to complain about something, I would suspect the majority of people don't know what their rights are. They should know. So number two is pressure. I like to think that my years as an advocate, particularly, I had about 20-odd years as an advocate at the Johannesburg Bar and in the neighboring countries, I was used to working under pressure. Best witness I can call is my wife. That doesn't trouble me. I've always thought with pressure, I may be wrong, if you want a job done, give it to a busy person. If you don't want it done, give it to somebody who's got plenty of time and doesn't work under pressure, because there's usually a reason for that. He's obviously no good or she's no good. So the pressure doesn't worry me. Your third question's a difficult one, to be objective. Again, I've got to bring my dear wife into this. She's a 40-year standing. She'll tell you the shortcomings. I don't want to be arrogant, but I'm sure I suffer from plenty human failings. Perhaps I'm a bit too impatient with things. Perhaps I don't listen enough. Perhaps I talk too much. That I've given evidence of this morning, so you can work it out yourself. I like to think I've been around the block once or twice. That's my positive contribution. I think I've had a bit of a history dealing with human rights. It's something that's close to my heart. I'm interested in it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have got up at 4 o'clock this morning to come here. So I think it's a matter that does concern me. And I think we've got a role to play, or the Judicial Services Commission has got. But as to my negative aspects, I leave it to other people. Positive ones, I leave it to you two.
Thank you. Where to go?
Good. Thank you, sir. Judge, in what capacity would you like to serve the commission if appointed, on a part-time or on a full-time basis? I have several questions you have made. Might want to jot them down a bit.
It's a good question, because I was wanting to ask the committee that, well, what is envisaged as a commission? Is it a full-time job? Is it a part-time job? Or how does it work? Or does it, do you sit when it...
Or both?
Both?
Yes.
Depends when it meets the commission or what? Is it a full-time job with an office, and you sit in the office full-time, you do nothing else?
Some are full-time. They sit in the office, do nothing else. Yes. Those are full-timers. Part-timers are allowed to do other work while they are contributing to the commission.
Yes, I must say my preference would be to be a part-timer. I'm involved in quite a lot of other activities. I don't want to get myself into terrible hot water. The deputy minister that was piloting this a long time ago, if you need permission to do certain things, not permission, okay. I'm involved with that. But I am involved in other things.
All right. No, I do have a few other questions.
Yes.
The next one is, how many of the official languages do you understand?
Regrettably, only two, very regrettably. I think on that subject, that's something that I feel very strongly about. I think it's one of the greatest tragedies of white South Africa that they never took the trouble to learn a black language. Instead of learning Latin and French, which are very interesting languages, I think it would have been better to start school children in court, in the Cape, and in Zulu, in Natal, and let them know something about it. I picked up a bit of it. I tried to do a course when I was on the bench, so a smattering of Fanagalo in the Tumal, and
okay.
A bit of course in the Cape, but in the Bloemfontein, not course, but whether I know anything about it would be arrogance. I always say, you've got to start young with it. People say that Chinese is a very difficult language to learn, no doubt it is. Mm. But young Chinese children, 5 and 6, speak it fluently. Grow up in the language. One of the...
If I may go to other more questions.
I mean, one of the beauties of black people in South Africa, not beauties, and I'm pleased to see it in the bench. The average black person, for a very good reason, I mean, you couldn't get a job unless you spoke the white man's language. Maybe today you can, but most black people speak 3 or 4 black languages, or certainly English and probably some Afrikaans in certain parts, only Afrikaans, not English, but certainly a black language, not a problem. My wife gets very upset when our maid wants to talk about her. And she talks in her own language. And my wife can't understand most of it, but she understands one word, and that's Mlung. So when she's speaking about Mlung, she knows exactly that that's a complaint about her. But that's a joke, but it's not a joke. She should be able to understand what the lady's saying.
Okay, Judge. Now, regarding your profession, I think it's common knowledge that it has been, like all other institutions, been discriminatory, oppressive of black members of the profession. What did you do as a human rights activist?
When I was in practice.
When you were in practice and also as a judge, to do away with discrimination.
Certainly when I was a judge, I've indicated I got actively involved in this Promotion of Equality Act. And I think what I tried to do, and we had a number of seminars, not only on the Equality Act, of trying to help judges in particular, disadvantaged judges, in getting to grips with the system. I'd been in the system, fortunately, for 20-odd years, so I knew something about it. When I was a practitioner, I did a fair amount of human rights work. I did a great deal of it. I had a very good friend in the form of the former Chief Justice, Jaskelson. When he set up the Legal Resources Center, I was quite active in that with him and with Bezos and with others. There was an organization called Defense in Aid. I don't know if you remember that. They got money from overseas, and I defended a number of people who were assisted by this body. It was a fairly underground organization as to where the money came from. We never asked about it. Some of the cases we did for nothing. But I remember so vividly, and that was a very good experience for me in human rights, in a place called Humansdorp. I'm sure all of you have heard of that great metropolis. I defended people and went on for about 2 months. A group of youngsters, 18 and 19-year-olds, who were charged with a very serious offense. What was it? They were wearing a T-shirt which decried the government said things that apartheid wasn't fair and all the rest of it. And we then were involved then in trying to defend them and mitigate the problems. And what was so apparent to me was the security in this small magistrate's court in Humansdorp. There were more policemen than accused in the place with their rifles. You'd have thought these youngsters were going to assault the magistrate. The atmosphere and the whole business. I did a fair amount of that. I can't say I was a human rights lawyer. That would be overstating the case. I was much involved in the nitty-gritty of collecting money and winding up companies and taxation and all the rest of it. I had a very good friend who later became the Chief Justice, and I was very much involved with his struggle to get a set of chambers in Johannesburg, Ismail Mohammed. He couldn't get chambers, and there was a whole up and down. I wasn't then on the Johannesburg Bar Council. I later became the chairman many years later. But when Ismail was having his problems, there were all sorts of difficulties. I remember I wasn't personally involved with him, Dumanakwe, and the problems that arose there. And I remember the problems that Mohammed had with the Group Areas Act. So we had cases. There was a chap from the Cape. He wrote a book with him called Dyson, since died. His son is an advocate in Joburg. So I was involved in some of that.
Last question. How do you propose the commission should deal with the apparent contradictions between some aspects of African customary law and also Muslim law, as well as the Bill of Rights?
A very thorny and difficult question. You've got two conflicting principles here. When you talk about customary law, there is a place for it. The place is where. Who are the people involved in that? And I think it's an oversimplification to say it's the whole of the black population involved in customary law. Not true. I think the phrase may be an unfortunate phrase. You have detribalized people, people who live in Soweto. A lot of them. We're not involved in Lobola and all sorts of other things. Doesn't mean that there aren't people in rural areas who are very much close to that, who believe that it's important. And I think you've got to marry the two. I saw a report, and I'm not sure what it means, and I would like further particulars, as we lawyers say. I see that the judge president of the Cape Slothy says he wants customary African law. I'm not sure what he means. I don't know whether he means that the Bills of Exchange Act must be abolished and the Companies Act, which we spent millions on fixing up, should be abolished and we should have some kind of new law, or whether it's the common law. If it's the common law, maybe there is room. Take, for example, inheritance. Take, for example, family law in regard to marriage and divorce. I've no doubt that there's room for that, as we seem to have to a point here now. You can get married by customary law. I think there's a well-known person who's got, I think, four wives, maybe more. That's permissible. In the old days, it wouldn't be. It would be polygamous, maybe, or it couldn't be registered, or the other three wives weren't recognized. That seems to me to be room for that kind of thing. So in that field, that's my view on it. I wouldn't exclude it, but I don't think you've got to throw the whole system overboard and replace it with a new idea. I think we're not there by any means. You're waving your right.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are.
May I ask one other question?
Yeah, please.
Is the idea then to appoint someone as a commissioner, either full time or part time, or is it going to be a full time appointment, or what's happening?
We still to discuss.
And the last question is, I don't want to obviously put you on terms.
Yeah.
When are you likely to come to this conclusion?
We're reporting to Parliament next week, on the 22nd, I think. Yes.
Sorry, what did you say?
We are reporting to Parliament on the 22nd of this month, yeah.
The Parliament has
Tuesday? I think it's next week, Tuesday.
So what do you put up a list of names?
Yeah, to Parliament. But once we decide, yeah, it's likely to go.
Oh, I see. How many people?
Six.
Six. Is it a whole new board?
We're going to have five full-time. We've got one in there already. We're looking for four full-time. And we're looking for two part-time. We're negotiating the funding for the part-time.
I know I've said that I would like to do it part-time. Mm. But... if you think that there isn't a vacancy for a part-time person, I'm happy to consider the full-time, depending on what it requires. But I wouldn't like to rule it out 100%. To keep my
options open.
Perhaps somebody will let me know.
We're grateful.
Thank you very much.
Came to present to us. Thank you very much. We're having a difficulty accessing arranging the interview as matters.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. We have tried this morning, yesterday. I think we are still not succeeding. We might as well just engage, go into the discussions on our candidate. Hopefully we can finish in 10 minutes if we... I don't know. How long do you expect us to run? Jim, your experience on this matter.
Well, if everyone agrees with me, we can leave now.